Welcome back to Red Flags Rising. My name is Mike Hunneke. I'm the co-chair of Hugh Severin Reed's Sanctions Export Controls and AML Practice Group. With me yet again is my good friend Brent Carlson, a director at the Berkeley Research Group. Today is Thursday, August 6th, 2025. I want to give a shout out to the listener who suggested we include the calendar year, and I'm flattered that they are expecting us to continue into the next year. It is just after 4:30 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time. Brent, how are you doing today?
Hey, Mike. It's great to be here. And behind me is San Francisco, California, the AI capital of the world.
Brent, we're not at a loss for topics, given all the events that are happening these days. What's the topic we're going to talk about today?
We're going to talk about preventing diversion, including smuggling, starts close to home. There's a great case that just came out. It has a lot of interesting key takeaways to unpack.
The case is United States of America versus Chuang Gang in Shiwei Yang, case number 225MJ04821. About being close to home, this was an arrest here in the United States, down near Los Angeles, in the United States District Court for the Central District of California. For anyone interested in looking at the underlying documents in the show notes, we'll include the case number and some links of where you can find the documents. We've seen actually many cases going back to some of the individual prosecutions by the National Security Division where intermediaries were using U.S. companies as fronts for purchases that then they diverted. This does start at home. When these arrests were unsealed, the affidavit in support of the arrest was also unsealed. I found, Brent, I know you have too, that when there's a new case that's disclosed and made public, sometimes the affidavit of the investigating agents involved, whether it's BIS or FBI, provide really interesting data points. We should give a shout out to the name redacted special agent at the Bureau of Industry and Security who put this together and who did the legwork underneath this, I'm sure with a lot of her or his colleagues' support and other perhaps U.S. agency support as well. If you're looking for case studies, not only about how do things end badly, but what happens as the government moves closer and closer to that conclusion or to thinking about, okay, do we need to issue an administrative subpoena? Is there going to be a civil settlement here? Or is there going to be a grand jury subpoena? Is there going to be a criminal resolution? Knowing the field craft of the BIS special agents is really important. If you're getting requests for voluntary cooperation, it helps you get a feel for what might be coming down the road and allows you to anticipate when you're giving those initial responses, what other things they might be doing in the background and what actually would be most helpful to them. Frankly, it allows you to anticipate what they might ask if they come back again.
For those who may be listening and they're not in the trade compliance function or the legal compliance function at a company, but they're looking at it from a strategic or broader business issues, keep in mind that export controls enforcement and preventing diversion is core to America's AI action plan. It's central to the president's executive order on July 23rd on promoting the export of American AI technology stack. It's all out in the guidance that BIS put out on May 13th. It's probably going to be another key part of any future guidance that's going to be coming out of BIS as well. So one thing to keep in mind in all this, whether you're a legal and compliance professional or you're in other parts of the operating business, is export controls offer a competitive advantage over your competitors. If you get this right, you can sail through this and you can take advantage of America's AI action plan and all the opportunities that that provides. But with those opportunities come responsibilities. Those companies, your competitors, who do not play the new game in the right way are going to get tripped up. They are not going to be as successful in this great AI global race. Keep that in mind as we go through it. This is not about getting lost in the weeds on a particular case. We're not going to get lost in the details. We're focusing on certain details that will allow you to have competitive strength out there in the marketplace. The juice is the implications for corporate enforcement. So let's walk through the background of the facts of the case. You have two PRC nationals that were living in Southern California charged with illegally shipping high-end microchips that were designed for artificial intelligence applications to China without the required export license. The chips here were NVIDIA GPUs, including the powerful H100. It's important to note right up front here that the affidavit does not have any allegations against NVIDIA. They're not involved in this at all. It was their chips that were actually going to another US company as part of their technology stack that then these individuals in Southern California were then purchasing domestically within the United States and then shipping off through Southeast Asia that then got over to China. These individuals bought these chips through a company that they set up right after the Biden administration applied export controls on advanced chips to China in October 2022. These two PRC nationals, plus one of their unnamed PRC national, set up a new Southern California company. 20 days after the new export controls came in, it was a fairly thin operation. There are only known to be three employees in the small office in the LA area, no operations. This is a classic example of what's covered in the news about smuggling advanced chips to China. When you're talking about export controls, compliance, and enforcement, this is really a diversion issue.
You know, what's interesting about this, Brent, is a point we've been talking about, but also BIS has been identifying and guidance for some time. If the purchaser, even if they're an intermediary, appears to be a fly-by-night operation or what some people might call a briefcase firm or a letterbox firm, we might call the front company, then obviously they expect you to do greater due diligence into that. Now, we're all looking at this with hindsight here. The supplier hasn't been charged, although they are mentioned in the facts of the affidavit, but this front company was created soon after a significant change. We've been talking for a long time, Brent, about the importance of holistic and dynamic assessments of risk. This is exactly what we're talking about. A big change happens. You can't get the same chips to the same people anymore. Some guy shows up with a miracle solution. It's his new company in Southern California. They sort of have a website, but it doesn't quite make sense. They really appear out of nowhere. There's a lot of telltale signs that this is not a real thing.
One of the things that came out in the affidavit, too, is that these individuals through this company in Southern California misrepresented to the U.S. supplier who the end users were going to be in Asia. And even in the actual shipping documents themselves, they were actually different purported end users than what were represented to the U.S. supplier. But even for those ones on the shipping documents, those ended up being freight forwarders. That's a classic issue where that's not an end user. There was an example in the affidavit of the freight agent in Malaysia. Again, a fairly thin operation in a dilapidated building. Didn't really look like something that's going to be a robust customer. What's really important is how it applies to corporate compliance and enforcement. In the affidavit, the unidentified CEO of that new company down in Southern California instructed one of the accused to disassemble some equipment that had the chips in it, ship it to Malaysia, where it will be forwarded onto China. This carries some important implications on how to prevent diversion. There's been a lot of discussion on how to address the smuggling issue. This is an example where the way it works for stuff going to the PRC, it's not going to be whole big data centers that are going to be forklifted over like multiple tons of equipment. It's going to be broken apart and put into pieces. PRC is full of technical talent to help put that stuff back together. That's how it works. Preventing diversion, it's not about going in and counting the racks, the server racks that are going to be in there. It's looking holistically at all available information and applying that high probability perspective to it. Counting the racks is not where the juice is going to be. In the Qing Dynasty, the companies had three different sets of books. Fraud is not something that's new here. I did a case in Asia where it revolved around bogus assets of all things frozen meat. And counting the boxes didn't do it because there were mislabeled boxes, labels were switched, the contents actually were not what they were reported to be. So instead of filet mignon, you're getting lips and butts. It's not an issue of just counting the boxes. It's not an issue of just counting the racks. You've got to look at things holistically with all available data and information and apply that high probability perspective, which is that full definition of knowledge that we've talked about. There's also another interesting tidbit in the affidavit. As part of the investigation that the government did, they obtained the communication devices and they found some text messages. One of the text messages is from the Southern California company CEO to one of the accused. He says, quote, "Pay attention to see if there's a tracker on it. You must look carefully." The next word that's going to come up, I'm going to use a different word than it's actually here because we still have a clean rating on the show, still as of today. So we don't want to lose that. But the word rhymes with trucking. But instead of TR, replace it with an F. But I'm going to use the word trucking here. Trucking Trump administration, who knows what they will do? If I were in government, I'd get a kick out of that one. It shows who we're up against here in all this, what they're expecting from the U.S. moves, and how unpredictable they may be. I think that's to the U.S. government's credit.
It's certainly helpful to think about, okay, this was a scheme involving a lot of people, lots of front companies, buyers in China that were different than the purported end users, who, by the way, were not at the addresses that they were supposed to be at, and or were freight forwarders. The name of the ship to entity was United Dispatch Agent, with dispatch spelled incorrectly. Even reading it phonetically, that's not an end user. It's an agent. It's somebody who's going to pick it up. The BIS agent's affidavit goes into somewhat entertaining detail about the location of the agent, its prior activities. This was a customs agent, basically, in Malaysia. It's these types of things that, when you put it all together like this, it looks ridiculous and might make out a high probability case when viewed in total. The real challenge for trade compliance professionals then is to step back and say, okay, well, what could we have seen or known at the front end that might have prompted us to do the same type of deeper inquiry beyond the representations we're getting from the buyers? As we've said many times, you're looking at hundreds of thousands of customers. You cannot do an investigation into every purchaser of your product. But where something maybe is new or different around an important historical event in terms of trade flows, just like these new export controls that came in 20 days before this company was created, that might be something, especially if you're looking at your new customer onboarding process, where you may want to probe somewhat deeply into any new customer around key export controls changes that affect your products directly.
This gets to some key questions that come up. It may be helpful to talk about what would be some of the red flags that would be here in the U.S. from the U.S. supplier's perspective, looking at this new company in Southern California after these export controls on China were put into effect. But let's just kind of run through them. This company in Southern California appears to be a closely held corporation with only 3 known employees. It was formed right after new export controls came into effect. There is no publicly available information about it. It didn't appear to have a website. The end users that this Southern California company represented to the U.S. supplier, one was purportedly in Singapore, one was purportedly in Japan. For the one in Singapore, that end user company didn't exist at the location provided. Per that company's website and LinkedIn page, it was described as a blockchain services provider focused on the e-cigarette industry. That's not a business that's aligned with training or developing AI models where you would need advanced AI chips. The director is a PRC Chinese national who is also a founder of several technology companies in China. There is no official email address or phone number associated with the company. For the other purported end user, this was an address in Japan, which appears to be a residential address. And its main business activities were described as a real nebulous application, development, maintenance, and operation. Again, doesn't really look like a robust customer in terms of using advanced hardware for AI development. These would be red flags that would have been apparent from that U.S. supplier's perspective that would come out in due diligence. This raises a couple questions in terms of what sort of know your customer due diligence should companies be doing, especially in this era of high probability enforcement, and what are the general Prohibition 10 implications in all this?
All good questions, Brent. What we don't know from the arrest affidavit is how many potential purchasers the supplier had that were like this, right? We don't know, you know, do they have tens of thousands of customers that are somewhat like this in terms of the quantity that they're purchasing, how many different ones they have? That's something we don't know, but that would be relevant to, in the instance of the order, whether this should or could have stood out to the people doing the initial KYC screening and the initial order intake. To me, what's interesting is that there is reference in the affidavit to the Bureau of Industry and Security reaching out in December of 2024 to the company asking for information about this purchase and about this purchaser. The supplier provided the information, so they've been cooperating. That's great. When you get an outreach visit from BIS, sometimes they're general and sometimes they're very specific. We've known of some people who've been told, hey, generally we expect XYZ regime is going to be trying to buy your product, just beware. Sometimes it's a very specific request for information about a very specific customer. It's very important for any company who gets those requests not to take those as just random or to consider the matter closed just because you successfully were able to find the purchase order or whatever it might be and give the information to BIS. It's basically like someone walking into your kitchen and saying, hey, there's a puddle of water underneath the dishwasher, and then you just keep running it. you have a leak somewhere and you've had the opportunity to be cooperative in helping to identify that leak. It's very important, if it's not already been done, to go back and look and say, well, what did we miss? And without even assigning blame or judgment, put aside the word miss, let's just say, what else should we think about doing now in case there are follow-up questions, whether it's from BIS or, in this case, this matter is now public, from reporters, from stakeholders in the company, from the board, about how are we managing these risks and how did we respond to this particular outreach? That might be an instance where, look, the shipment was sent, right? But it's a great record to be able to show later that, hey, you know, we took on board just the fact that you, BIS, asked a question about this particular purchaser. We've done our own due diligence. We've also read the public court documents. And you know what? We checked to see if there were other similar purchasers around the same time who set up shop trying to be the homegrown diversion hub for purchasers in China who couldn't buy these particular chips or systems anymore. That would be something that would create a very good record that you could defend yourself and your company later with. Anybody, whether it's BIS, whether it's you, Brent, it's me, whether it's the media, whether it's stakeholders or boards, would assume with a country the size of China and with a market the size of China's, and frankly, with an appetite that China has for these types of high-end leading-edge chips, this isn't likely to be the only attempt that was made to procure chips to divert them to prohibited end users or for prohibited end uses, or frankly, just to ship them without a license for whatever purpose. We focus, Brent, I think appropriately, on end use and end user restrictions as being really the future of where we think enforcement is heading. There are still item-based restrictions that would have been triggered here. The other thing we don't know that we should point out is that, especially in just the normal course of business, sellers may not have visibility into the shipping documents that the BIS agent dutifully walks through here. They certainly wouldn't have access to the purchaser's Gmail addresses that the BIS agent was able to mine effectively here. So there may be a lot more information in this arrest affidavit than the particular supplier ever knew. But this affidavit is a window into what some of those red flags might be hiding. They're not all going to be hiding this. But having some system in place going forward where you can say, well, when we see things like that, this is how we're going to triage, this is how we're going to sample, this is how we're going to try to put in place a process where it's going to be a bunch of subjective judgments, and you're just doing your best. But there's some demonstrable, explainable, and most importantly, defendable record that you can show to BIS if you ever have to, saying, well, yeah, we missed what you're asking us about today, but here are the 24 other things we stopped because we were looking at these types of risks. We just missed this particular one.
You make a very good point in that companies should develop and implement a high probability protocol that we've discussed before on this show and written about elsewhere to be able to defend themselves and to be able to incorporate that full definition of knowledge under the EAR into their compliance program. That should also address some of these risks that may be coming on the domestic U.S. front as well. This is where it's a good reminder of General Prohibition 10 in here, because it may not be you, the company, selling it directly to another entity that's going to then engage in this diversion or smuggling behavior, but looking at this very carefully and with a qualitative eye, with General Prohibition 10 in mind, with the full definition of knowledge in mind, and the government's new emphasis on high probability enforcement, to be able to flag those issues. Even in looking at these purported end users, okay, what do we know about them? And then making sure that we have a process for resolving them before proceeding.
And all the more reason to adopt a high probability protocol, Brent, is that the agents are applying a high probability mindset in deciding where their investigations will lead them. The agent talks about training he or she received here, both formal and informal, specifically on red flags analysis, identifying red flags and analyzing the risks that are behind those red flags. You can see in this very detailed affidavit how those red flags led to further questions. The agent ultimately got to the bottom of the case and signed an affidavit in support of the arrest of these two individuals and a third who remains at large. So if you're wondering what's going on behind the scenes when I get questions from BIS that seem very specific about very specific purchasers or forwarders or end users, this is the type of gumshoe police work that's being done by BIS day by day, chasing these cases down. We've talked about sometimes how long these investigations can take. when we talked about the $140 million settlement most recently, Brent, that was a long process. There was an administrative subpoena in 2021, presumably correspondence that led up to that. There were grand jury subpoenas several years later. If we just look at the dates from this affidavit, things can move pretty quickly. The conduct allegedly was from October 2022 to July 2025. On December 10th, 2024, there's a shipment that was stopped and inspected by customs. On July 31st, 2025, a search warrant was executed at the offices of this front company. On August 1st, which is really the next day, is when this arrest affidavit was submitted under seal in court, and then it was announced just on Tuesday of this week, on August 5th, publicly by the U.S. government. Sometimes these things, I think as you said in your managing up last time, Brent, can take longer than we expect to develop, but then they move very quickly. You had office search, arrest warrant, arrest, public disclosure, all within a week. All of this is going on behind the scenes all the time.
If BIS enforcement officials do come at your door, cooperate and don't kick the hornet's nest, as we've talked about in a couple of our Fresh Looks articles. Consider their questions carefully and think about their questions. If you may have some export controls, compliance risks, or enforcement exposure yourself, address it strategically. Don't get flat-footed in reactionary mode. Those days are gone. It's important to keep that in mind, that this could be very easily lost in the news. We say, okay, two individuals charged for illegal export of high-end AI chips to China, and that doesn't have anything to do with us. Well, think about it from that perspective of high probability enforcement. What are the red flags that were known or knowable for our own company's people, and to evaluate what's the best approach to address those?
If you read the affidavit, this is another instance of law enforcement eventually getting much, much, much greater information than private companies are ever going to have on the front end when they're doing KYC. We have the search of cell phones. We have reference to text messages. We have subpoenas to internet service providers to look not only at web-based email that these guys were using to run their business, documents stored online in the cloud, showing shipments and orders and things like that. That's not to say that anyone on the front end doing a review of a new customer is going to be able to act like the police, but the risks of not having that protocol in place are that when the government does do this type of field work and comes back to you and says, how could you have missed this? They're not expecting you to have access to all this information that they have the authority to access. They are hoping that you can explain to them, what was your process for identifying risks? What have you learned because this one slipped through the cracks? How are you reacting to that going forward? That's part of the broader Department of Justice guidance, by the way, regarding the prosecution of business organizations. The Department of Justice instructs line prosecutors to evaluate how effective was the compliance program. It doesn't mean that just because there was a violation that the program is bad, but they do want to know, when there were problems, did you do a root cause analysis? And did you enhance your compliance program to remediate any problems that that root cause analysis identified? This is completely separate from whether you decide to voluntarily disclose. Whether to BIS or DOJ, you may not have anything to disclose if you're just in receipt of some questions from BIS. But that's why the program is important. It's not just a process for process's sake. It's a process to help you make subjective judgments in a defensible way, frankly, in an objective way, if that makes sense, that you can then repeat, document, and defend later.
It's a brave new world. Back in the old days, this is something that could be easily missed from a company's perspective, saying, well, we're not exporting it, but go back to General Prohibition 10. Look at that. Have you looked at the compliance program and its processes and procedures? Does it address potential issues like this? Because those bad actors out there that are intent on engaging in diversion, engaging in smuggling activities, they're going to be trying anything by hook or by crook. Sometimes this could be close to home. And are we addressing these as well? That's important to think about from a big picture perspective.
Brent, coming back to General Prohibition 10, where and how that might play in, but also some of these inchoate provisions under 764.2 that we talked about might also play in, is that if the supplier becomes aware of a high probability of a violation of the export controls, or that that has happened, and we're not saying that's what the case is here, that's not one of the allegations in the affidavit, the supplier is not charged in this case, but if there were sufficient facts to put the supplier on that level of awareness, and then they still shipped it without doing the necessary due diligence, General Prohibition 10 talks about the transfer, really anything at all related to a current, but also a past or future violation of the AR, GP10, as we call it in the business, turns on knowledge. That's critical because knowledge is not just actual knowledge. It's red flags. Are you aware of red flags? This could be the type of situation where the more that the Department of Justice and the Bureau of Industry and Security are flagging these types of red flags, the less sympathetic they will be that they did not trigger that kind of high probability awareness, due diligence reaction that they expect in companies. Coming to 764.2, what's interesting about this affidavit, Brent, is not only is there the smuggling charge really here, there's a conspiracy charge. The government can always add other players to the conspiracy as their investigation progresses, including as they start talking to, maybe talking more to, the two individuals that they caught. They will be now discussing with these individuals and explaining to them or through their lawyers, well, here's how the United States sentencing guidelines work. Here's the range of years of imprisonment that you would face if you contest these charges, but we convict you of them. That sometimes causes people to plea. I mean, if you look at statistics in the United States criminal justice system and it's a valid criticism of it, I think something like 98% of cases are resolved without a trial. There's going to be huge pressure under these structural aspects of the system for these individuals to plea. When they plea, what happens? They're going to cooperate. It's very possible that there's other players dragged into this under that conspiracy charge. And that's, again, something that BIS has the authority to do. Attempt, conspiracy, misstatements, dealing with knowledge, all of these things are under those inchoate provisions under 764.2. Well, Brent, that brings us to managing up. What is your managing up segment for today?
Solutions may be found right under your nose. When we're looking at this whole world of preventing diversion, tamping out the smuggling, before chasing around the world and playing whack-a-mole compliance or a never-ending snipe chase, start with the information, data, and due diligence done close to home. Front companies can pop up right down the road from corporate headquarters here in the U.S. It's important to look at things holistically. Instead of jumping and counting racks, or if anybody's telling you to count racks, that's not the whole picture. Look for and resolve those red flags at the origin of the transactions. Instead of way over there, you can start at the front end. In doing so, it's going to help everybody. It's going to help us all prioritize and focus a company's compliance efforts and address issues before BIS comes out with more questions and even more questions and possibly even an administrative subpoena.
Absolutely, Brent. Well said. You know, one thing that keeps coming to mind too is that as we discussed when we talked about America's AI action plan, the American government is expecting patriotism as a civic duty here of exporters. And maybe more practically speaking, they do not want to be seen as getting played for suckers or fools by the smugglers. I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see a lot more and very public disclosures of enforcement activity, both against individuals and entities or companies. These very specific facts about the smuggling scheme, including that these guys were going to break apart a large piece of equipment to then smuggle it, are going to significantly influence public debate around what does the AI action plan look like and what is expected of people who want to profit from it. I think there's going to be a lot of political pressure in all kinds of directions every time there's one of these smuggling schemes that are busted. You know, Brent, there is a lot of debate about how easy or not it is to smuggle things, and that debate cuts both ways. Sometimes those comments have been reported as, well, it's so difficult to smuggle, smuggling really isn't a concern, and our export controls don't need to be as robust. On the other side of that is, well, if they are smuggled, then shouldn't it be easy for somebody to have stopped it in the first place? If you look at this, you're talking about, at least in one instance, an order from December of 2023 of 106 servers, looking up some of the technical specs on that. Each of those gross weight is around 225 pounds, 23,850 pounds, Brent. That's almost 12 tons. Now, you don't have to ship them all together, but you can see why in that instance, they would want to ship these individually, at least not ship it all at once.
Or you've got the instruction to disassemble them and ship them. So I think it goes back to that point where if somebody's telling you that it's just all about counting the racks, then they're trying to play you for a fool or a sucker. That's not the whole story. There's more to it than that. There's a whole lot more to come.
Well, Brent, that concludes this episode of Red Flags Rising. Be well.
Thanks, Mike. Be well. And everyone else out there, be well.